Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
The following interview was conducted on December 9th, 2014, 2 days before the world premiere of The Interview in Los Angeles. A week later, amid threats from hackers that involved a 9/11 threat-level catastrophe, many theaters pulled out of showing the film. Sony then announced on December 23rd that the film would have a limited release on Christmas Day, alongside its immediate release on multiple streaming platforms.
I feel like if they see the movie, maybe they would realize that it's not such a big deal.
Hi, I'm Rocco, and I'm here with James Franco, Seth Rogen, and Evan Goldberg. They're the principals behind a new movie called The Interview, in which two television journalists interview Kim Jong-un and try to kill him. What the fuck have you guys done to the world?
I don't know. Not definitively anything. maybe nothing. We just wanted to, I mean, what's so funny is like, when you watch the movie, it's just such a silly, like we wanted to make a really funny comedy, and we thought, you know, we've learned from experience that the more you root movies in the world that the viewer themselves is in, and the more they're able to bring their own feelings and experiences to the movies when it starts, it's been something we found to be very effective and a fun tool. And so we thought of this idea about guys who were kind of enlisted to kill a dictator, and we started reading about North Korea and Kim Jong-un, and we thought, oh, that maybe that's the dictator to kill, basically.
Yeah, this was before it kind of caught into the zeitgeist and became a big thing. Like, yeah. This was pre-Kim Jong-un, pre-Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, Kim Jong-il.
It was a long time ago for us.
Yeah.
So around what year did you guys first get this idea?
It was before this is, like, 5 years ago?
Yeah,
it was five or six years ago.
5 years ago, yeah.
And then I think what happened is we made This Is the End and we played with reality and having people play themselves, and this was kind of like a logical progression.
Yeah.
Right, that was still a question on This Is the End, if we would even play ourselves, right?
Yeah.
But then, obviously, I hope people don't think that's like actually what we're really like.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? But there's stuff that's sort of based on us, and it, like Seth was saying, kind of grounds the emotion of it.
Yeah. And I think Kim Jong-un in this movie is probably as much like Kim Jong-un as we are ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, or, I mean, who knows?
Right. Yeah. An approximation of it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you talk about the reality where North Korea might be the most surreal place in the world, at least in terms of what we see from the outside and the few people who've gone in and done reports. Vice has done a few. How was it creating that world? I mean, how much realism did you want in the backdrop? Obviously, the plot's interestingly executed, to use a pun.
I mean, visually, we put a lot of effort into making sure it looked as close to what we knew it to be from all the documentaries we watched.
And mostly that, from your documentaries.
Yeah. And that's really all we had was documentaries and photos and a few firsthand accounts. And they all seem to corroborate the same story, which is this bizarre, kind of bleak-looking place that has extreme pops of strange colors and tons of murals.
Yeah, lots of kind of...
Lots of pictures of the...
Yeah, lots of pictures of the leader, you know. Yeah, and we, as much as possible, tried to make the parts set in Pyongyang look like what we were able to surmise it looked like. But a lot of the movie takes place... That is why a lot of the movie takes place in, like, this fortress outside of the main city, because it gave us a lot more creative license to kind of do whatever we wanted and make it look however we wanted. The movie's a lot, it's mostly all visual effects. Yeah. A lot of it is built in post. It's a lot of us standing in front of green screens. We basically built a digital North Korea. And
that sounds scary.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I think it was all in reaction to being stuck in one house for almost an entire movie with This Is the End.
We wanted to
bust free. There's one part in the movie that is definitely the stupidest part of the whole film, when we just cut to a military base for no reason. Because we just wanted to show a military base.
We wanted to give it Michael Bay film. Yeah, we thought that Michael Bay would do that.
And on the other side of things, you're playing a TV journalist, his producer.
This is the biggest interview since Frosty Nixon.
Frosty Nixon?
I mean, in 10 years, Ron Howard's gonna make a movie out of this. We do this, we can interview any president on the planet. And then you can ask him the real questions. This is like eating our vegetables. Once you eat those, then you get to eat the steak.
What kind of research did you do for that? Because it's almost like some of those segments I feel like could be on regular TV if you're, you know, weren't such a big movie star. People would buy it.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, that's the side of it that people maybe aren't talking about as much, is that, you know, this is a satire, but it's equally, you know, a satire of American celebrity culture and gossip journalism as it is of anything else. And so for this character, I think in the writing of it and then, you know, the performing of it and the directing of it, it all sort of, we're all kind of familiar with, you know, being interviewed. We're, you know, we understand what, you know, it's like to be gossiped about, and so for me, it was really a guy that, just finding that guy who loves gossip, but that kind of adds up to, well, because that's what people want to read about, like that's, you know, that's how I'm gonna get attention.
Guys, some pictures just came out where it looks like McConaughey's fucking a goat.
Ooh.
McConaughey goat fuck? McConaughey goat fuck.
Get him, get the goat! Get the goat!
When I watch TMZ, fucking people in that fucking room.
Yeah, sort of like that.
Like, those are the people that I'm like, they, like, truly seem to think that this is like God's fucking work that they're doing, basically.
Right.
Like that, and that, like, it is their responsibility as people who work at TMZ, a very serious responsibility to bring people shit and shove it into their faces.
Right.
And like that, that was one of the things I think that like they're so happy when something's bad, and they there's like no sense of like, should we be sensitive towards this? Is this in any way wrong of us to be discussing? It's someone's personal life, it's a tragedy, it's someone trying to have a special moment. Is there any sense that we're perverting it or ruining it? And that, like, you, I feel like you look them deep in the eye and there's zero fucking sense that what they're doing is like in any way
sort of like you cross
detrimental
the line. You murdered one person, then it's like, oh, it's so much easier to murder the next.
It's an extreme analogy, but it's
Or like I had a friend, a young friend who was at the Harvard Lampoon, and then the poor guy out of college could only get a job at TMZ, and they got this photo of me. One of my fellow Columbia students took a photo of me sleeping in this lecture, and TMZ got it. He gave it to TMZ, and my friend told me, like, that was Like the ultimate moment. That was like,
they're just like jerking
deep
off.
Throat. Yeah. We got deep throat. Like,
not so studious now. Was that like?
That was like Snowden. Like,
yeah.
To them.
You got James Franco sleeping in class.
Yeah.
This is going everywhere. Yeah. It's so crazy.
Well, and that's interesting because I feel like if you were to put like Harvey Levine in this scenario, I don't think whatever's going on in there that sounds borderline sociopathic and. From your point of view, which I would agree with, would he save the world? Probably not. I
mean, if he thought it would help his show,
that's true.
Yes,
actually.
But, which is kind of why he agrees to do it. It's like, I honestly think, yeah. If he thought it would in any way perpetuate his company and his stature, then probably. But I don't know. Maybe not. I've never met the guy.
Well, there's an element of the naivety of the character, of your character, which. On the tail end, where he gets Kim Jong-un to admit that he has a butthole and peas, that's the kind of secret that cracks, you know, the great leader. I just don't think Harvey Levine would have the acumen.
Exactly.
You have to secure the payload.
What do I do with it? What do I do with it?
There are people coming.
Where the fuck do I hide it?
What if you hide it in your butt?
I don't want to stick it in my ass.
You gotta put it in your butt right now.
It's a little big to stick up my ass.
They are closing in on you.
The package is secure.
But there is a couple of very interesting things. I mean, this is seems to have like quite a long gestation period. I mean, over the course of the father dying and the son taking over. So I imagine some changes had to be made to the script at that point. However, even within the movie, I mean, the release date was pushed probably for many reasons, but I know there was specifically something with buttons, I believe, that had to be digitally altered.
Oh, that wasn't why we pushed.
Okay.
We pushed for one reason only, which is we had a better date
Christmas
available to us. The buttons thing came down to people have all these suspicious theories as to what's going on, and it's literally a legal clearance issue.
Yeah.
We couldn't clear the images from the artists because they're in North Korea, and we couldn't get to them. So we had to change 400... buttons.
Yeah.
And the buttons have someone else's face.
Kim now it's
now it's like a slightly image. Amalgamated version of Kim Jong. It's
wait, you were worried about the rights of the artist?
It does exist in like a murky legal territory at times because like that, you know, the sculpture that the little girl is seeing in front of in the opening shot of the movie is a real sculpture. And traditionally you would need the sign off of the person who sculpted it. And obviously that's impossible. When that person is in North Korea somewhere.
Well, and apparently North Korea doesn't understand the legal process. They just retaliate by hacking you, which...
Maybe, allegedly.
Maybe it's North Korea.
Maybe.
Maybe
it's
that's
like a game of Clue,
film.
Man.
Yeah,
we don't know where it's going to land.
It could be
being,
Colonel Mustard.
But I will say, you know, beyond that, the speculation has been since the summer because they declared this movie, I believe, an act of war is what the North Koreans said or at least wrote to the UN, which I think it's the first movie that's historic, right, to be declared an act of war. Was Team America World Police declared that? I think you guys have one up.
I don't think in this capacity, no.
And they called you terrorists. How do you feel about perhaps there's some people...
They called Seth a gangster filmmaker.
Oh, that was the best one, honestly.
A gangster?
That I actually really
And I take insult. I wasn't included in that.
No, they do not They clearly respect the directing partnership less than anything.
Yes. Well, there has to be a supreme leader.
Exactly.
I don't even know. There's I feel like both of us, like, they can't comprehend that you're a team or we're a team. Someone's in charge.
I'm the gangster filmmaker. It was a little surreal, honestly. Yeah, I mean, we didn't expect that degree of what I would hope is rhetoric to be thrown at us. But at the same time, it wasn't, I guess, entirely surprising.
Yeah, we knew they'd say something, but we just thought they'd say we'd disapprove of this film.
But again, what's so...
It seems like that response was... not coming from having seen the movie, just hearing the concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing is, I feel like who knows? This is the weirdest thing to say. I feel like if they see the movie, maybe they would realize that it's not such a big deal.
maybe
not. maybe that have the opposite feeling. But it's so to me, to us when we watch it, it's so like silly and like it seems weird that there's anything in it that you would take so seriously.
Maybe the scene where Kim Jong-un shoots him. It's just the guy in the
asshole. In the butthole. Yeah.
That's where I was like, up until then I was like, oh, this is great. You shouldn't be. And then I was like, maybe. The asshole was ironic as a line that might have
been. Your butthole is, yeah. Like, butthole maybe, maybe he won't like that. Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe he'll be like,
maybe he'll be like, that was another zinger for me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real story. Is he's probably has it like on 15 different formats and screens.
We like to think that in his head, he's just like, guys.
Right.
You got me.
So got me. And it's just like his people that are a little upset, and he's just like,
work. It's like us. Our agents get mad about shit that we're okay with. You show up and you're like, what? I didn't ask for this fruit plate.
Kim Jong-un's people believe anything he tells them, including he doesn't urinate and defecate.
You tell me my man doesn't pee or poo?
Everybody pees and poos. Otherwise he'd explode.
Like, if you had to wager a gamble, do you think he's seen it? Kim Jong-un has seen the film? Just on top of your head. And does that make you... It's got to make you kind of happy.
If we kept trying to guess what is happening, we'd all go crazy.
Yeah, that's I have no clue. Is I have no idea.
Like, Randall, I mean, he comes off really well.
Yeah.
We went out of our way to really try to make him... To make him a three-dimensional character, you know? To make him sympathetic and to explain where he's coming from and his backstory. We wanted him... He's very lovable at times in the movie.
I mean, it's miles beyond the depictions of anybody in, like, the Naked Gun series.
Exactly, yes. Or Team America or something. Yeah, if Team America is your benchmark, this is like your Jamie Foxx and Ray in comparison. This is like a fluff piece of all fluff pieces.
But I do think Randall's performance is particularly great because it's almost like the secret private life of someone that's the most guarded, at least weirdest hermit kingdom
exactly,
in the world.
Yeah.
So a lot of that had to be interpreted, and it seems very realistic and on some levels. And
I mean, it was derived partially from stuff we read about him and, the family situation, you know, the things people believe about him, the cult of personality that is kind of created in North Korea. It's just like, okay, like here's, again, nothing is a fact because no one actually knows anything. Knowing that these may or may not be this person's attributes, how do you form this into a character in a movie given like these benchmarks essentially?
It's almost the way that, you know, the character, like Danny McBride's character in This Is the End Works, where
it's like what do
Danny's
people know
the
about
sweetest
him?
Guy, yeah. But everyone that meets him on the street thinks he's like eastbound and down.
Yeah, it and is. Part of it is just really asking, like, what does the audience know about him? Yeah. They know, you know, that it's weird over there. They know they.
But it's
you
also
know,
just the situation, like he's an upcoming leader who just took over a specific country with a specific reputation, and like, what would it be to be a man stuck in that situation, which is a difficult and insane situation that one could argue there is some ways to be sympathetic towards a guy with those issues. And that's kind of one of the things Randall cracked, I think, when he came in.
Yeah.
For sure, and I think you see it when he's a young leader as well, I think, is something that people don't take into account, who's inherited probably the most insane situation in the world. But you figure if he likes Dennis Rodman and he likes basketball, I think there is a point to be made where he must like...
American
Western,
culture, yeah.
I mean, so this, there has to be... Maybe he doesn't have a sense of pride given the nature of the movie, but I mean, it's almost the best. It's like a roast or something. Right?
I know, and that, I mean, part of me would maybe think that's how he would interpret it. I would hope. I hope so. It's a great roast, yeah.
Were you worried at all that he was gonna, because up in the last few months, he's been reportedly unhealthy, eating too much Gouda cheese, broke his ankles or something like this. Were you worried that he might pass before the film was released?
I mean, it was something we were aware, there was definitely a conversation of like, how would this affect the movie?
Yeah.
When handling the rice in the strip, operate with extreme caution. Even momentary flesh contact with the exposed strip is fatal. Dave needs to appear casual as he is transferred from his room to the broadcast facility. It is critical that he keeps his hand open and touches nothing.
Dave's got to learn.
Dave will bow to Kim, then shake his hand, immediately disposing of the strip in his jacket pocket, which will be lined with an absorbing agent that denatures the poison.
Oh no!
film result in you guys perhaps not paying closer attention to world events, but maybe seeing, looking at things, maybe like what's under the surface of these things, you know? Can the world cope with these situations a little bit better with some comedy? Because I do think this is a pretty unique film in that way, that it really plays on, like you said, a realistic scenario and takes it to a different level.
I think, let me set you guys up and you can finish. Like, I think, you know, one thing that Seth and Evan said to me, it becomes a question of how much crap do you put into your material and how much, you know, serious stuff do you put into your material? And you know, is there a way to balance it or what, you know, how do you work that out? Because it seems like crap sells more in certain areas and et cetera. So, and with this very movie, by, you know, nature of the subject matter and the approach that they're taking, they too are also, although I think their, you know, previous movies are incredible, you know, movies, but they might be perceived as kind of, I don't know, on the sillier comedy side. So this is a movie that kind of takes one little step towards, you know, kind of a more serious subject or concept.
I mean, I think we, you aspire to do things that comedy can do, you know? And when you grow up watching stuff like Dr. Strangelove and you watch shows like The Daily Show and South Park and you see these comedians that are able to truly incorporate the real problems of the world and make them digestible in such a way where it's not only tolerable, it's desirable to watch it and think about it. I mean, that, I'm not saying we're doing that to the success that any of those things I just named are, but I think that's the conversation that led to the movie in some degree. But that being said, our first and foremost priority is to be funny. And I remember, like, watching that Kubrick documentary and someone's talking about Dr. Strangelove and they're like, yes, it's brilliant and it's a great satire and parody and it comments on all of the atrocities of war, but the only reason people still watch it is because it's really funny. And that is, like, a very good lesson. There's a lot of movies that equally articulate the horrors of war and the nuclear era of the 60s that just aren't funny, so you don't fucking watch them. And that, to us, was, like, there could never be a moment where it was just like, oh, it's a political movie, we're pushing this agenda. We don't even have a political agenda, honestly. Like, we read about politics and we're aware of it, but, like, this movie is not trying to make anyone really think any certain thing. It's just kind of meant to explore a certain, some ideas, you know? But first and foremost, we wanted to make people laugh. I flip a gangbang.
Ow! There! You like it? You like it? But I think comedy is, like, a really key element here for the other reason that it's, if you can make people laugh, you can also talk about certain things in a much more kind of palatable way.
Well, like when we made 50-50, right? That was, like, a good lesson.
Yeah.
Well, that taught us that there's, like, a roller coaster, which in This Is the End, it was, like, horror and comedy, and 50-50, it was the cancer and comedy, and in this, it's politics and comedy, where you can do some politics, but then you got to break the ice and let people laugh again with a joke, and the tension kind of works. It gets them ready to laugh, and then you give it to them right when they want it.
And 50-50 also showed us that we could make a movie about something very serious and make people very happy to watch it, you know, which you wouldn't normally, you wouldn't want to watch a movie about a guy with cancer.
Yeah, and when someone, taking 50-50 as an example, gets cancer in real life, you're not just sad the whole time. Like, you laugh, you're sad, you're happy, you're angry.
Yeah.
Like, laughter is part of everything, and so it seems weird to me when there's just a drama with, like, no laughter. Unless it's about something real sad.
Yeah.
And that's not real life, you know. Yeah. One note is not real life. Yeah. You need all those things. And Dr. Strangelove is a great example. It's almost like Hollywood in particular, and when you veer away from The Daily Show or talk shows, that sort of art of satire has largely not been explored, I think, as much in recent times because the world is so serious, I think, now, and there's some serious shit happening. But like we were saying, I think it allows people to talk about things they wouldn't otherwise. And, I mean,
Yeah.
Are you guys still moving in that direction? Should we expect the interview too with...
No. Me and Evan were like, maybe we should stay away from politics for a few years.
Yeah, we're going to do some comic books.
Make a romantic comedy. Yeah, we're directing a pilot based on a comic book. It's, I mean...
As far away from reality as possible.
Yeah, I mean, as... Honestly, it's just been a little stressful over the last few days.
And like, you only get so much with the public in every direction, and I feel like we've pushed this one.
Yeah,
and we're done.
Yeah, exactly. People seem into it right now. Let's just leave. You know, I hope they like it. And it's been a lot to deal with, honestly, like emotionally, and just kind of it's been draining. You know, so we'll make a nice silly romantic movie next, maybe.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Good to see you, brother.
And Thank you, man.
Really, I hope you, you know, you survive till the premiere.
Me too.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.